Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit Kane5.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Wonder how they get that creamy filling into the middle of a Twinkies cake? Well, these kids have some pretty good ideas.
First, they put down the creamy filling, then they bake the cake all around.
See, they got this big tube full of the stuff, and they just squish it in.
It's just born there.
Hostess Twinkies cakes, fruit pies, and cupcakes. Yahoo! The fresh snacks with a snack in the middle.
Oh, and that is the intro to Eating Disorder, Season 3. I even question bringing up the fact that the precocious six-year-old said, it's a big tube and you just squeeze it in. I can't imagine what the Reverend must have been thinking. But the Reverend is here.
Hey, I'm here, Bill.
He's here. And we teased that little clip. We have a Twitter account, right, Reverend?
Yeah. It's at ForkU Radio.
Yes.
F-O-R-K. Y-O-U.
If you are listening.
R-A-D Radio.
And you tweet. See if you can tweet and take a guess as to who our very special in-studio guest is. And we're gonna mention him in a minute. We're going to give you a moment to do that. But he is forever linked with the product aforementioned in that very old ad. But the Rev, I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, I've been away. I was out in Savannah. It was fun. Savannah's amazing. We went by Paula Deen's restaurant and kept walking.
Okay. Walking yes, by. That's walking not something by. Most people do yeah, at Paula no, Deen's no, restaurant.
No, no. We kept walking by.
A lot of wheelchairs and oxygen tanks, I would think.
No, but we had some great grits. It was some great food.
Did you bring us back any Stone Country grits? I didn't even know you were going.
It was fantastic.
Low country food.
But I will tell you this. Every so often, the Rev shows up on New York One on The Call, if you've ever seen The Call. And John Schumo, who I love, and I love his show, and I love The Call, threw me some shade. And the reason he did was there was a whole thing about the MTA and subways and whatever. And I called the L train hipster Auschwitz. And
right. Yeah, they did not appreciate that on the
no,
call.
No, he didn't. He really didn't.
Yeah. You're too used to the Heritage radio network.
I know.
I know. They don't pay attention to anything we say.
I love my New York One. John, I'm so sorry. Yes. I'm so sorry, John.
Are you forever banned from New York One?
No. I'll change my name and call again.
Is Pat Kieran going to show up at your door at Halloween?
Pat
with
lives,
a,
lives in Williamsburg.
He's going to show up at your house with a little bag.
He lives on Bedford Avenue. Did you know that?
Does he live on Bedford Avenue?
He bought a place on Bedford Avenue. He did.
Right there between the Bagelsmith and Farina's Pizza, probably.
The Bagelsmith is gone, by the way.
No,
but it's
really?
Close to Vinny's Pizza. It
shouldn't have been open 24 hours. But I'm glad to catch up. I had an interesting weekend. Pat Deep Dish Bertoletti, good friend of mine, who owns a food truck with Gravy Brown in Chicago called Glutton Force 5. It's really a food brand.
Yes.
And he has a place called Taco in a Bag in a mall. He has something called a breakfast Mexican chorizo gravy that he puts over fresh-made tortilla chips.
I just feel that there's like a smoke turning into a skull. That
yes,
you know?
Well, they have the party bot. They have a unicorn. They have some logo stuff there. But he was in town for a unmentioned dumpling contest where he ate 79 dumplings in 2 minutes, and he was disqualified.
For what?
They said he mashed them. This is a competitive eating contest. He mashed them. So I thought it was a little ridiculous. So
no,
I took him out.
Define mashed. What did he do?
Well,
did
like he was stuffing them in his face and they fell back into the bowl.
Oh.
But regardless, speaking of mashing, I'm going to introduce our next guest. Now, he has been a contributor and instrumental in over 40 books. But 7 years ago, six for the paperback, he was involved in a book that he wrote that will forever be destined to sort of be with his name. His name is Steve Attinger, and if his tombstone is made of Twinkies, you'll know why. Because his book, Twinkie Deconstructed, took what is probably one of the most iconic American, you could call it fast food, but American snack food, and did what the book title says, which is what it goes into this, where are these ingredients made, found, And I don't know if you know this, Rev, but we're talking like the triple threat: animal, plant, and mineral. Maybe I did that right. Did I do that right? Is those the three?
Animal, yeah. Vegetable,
animal. Thank you, Steve. Let's welcome Steve to the show, because already, like, minute two, I screwed it up. It's animal,
vegetable, mineral.
Animal, vegetable, mineral. So the Twinkie, which we're going to talk a lot about, has those three. And let's go back, though. Let's before we get to the Twinkie. Now, I know you also are a contributor and a blogger for the Huffington Post, of which I also write, but many people don't realize that. I write about competitive eating, which is where our worlds are going to coincide. But you have done books like Wine for Dummies.
Wine for Dummies, which of all my books is probably the best-selling book because they did it in a gazillion iterations. Red Wine for Dummies, French Wine for Dummies, Italian Wine for Dummies.
Dessert
Wine for Dummies, Champagne for Dummies.
So it's like the book of lists for dummies.
Well, my God. Some of those are small, some of those are big, but it's over a million copies.
That's good.
I'm impressed. Beautiful. But we also did Beer for Dummies, which sold about 24 copies.
Was that with Jimmy Carbone?
No. What happened was I got involved in that because I had the idea, after doing Wine for Dummies, I recruited a beer expert, a beer taster, professional beer taster. Now, there's a profession, my friends. A beer taster,
yes.
Who was really nice guy, became a friend, but he had trouble with writing in the Dummies format, and instead of my sort of helping
Should he have
edit,
picked up a book called Writing for Dummies?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So we became partners on the book, but of course I had to do research to understand when he was talking, say, about malty flavor
or
Vienna lager. And as a result, every day I had to buy a different beer based on what I was writing about.
Yes.
I found a great beer store, which is sadly no longer in existence, in the village right near my son's kindergarten at the time.
Oh, yeah, that's a good mix. Drop the kid off at kindergarten,
well,
hit the beer store.
Well, it's actually picking him up.
Oh, picking him up,
and
I guess.
Even better.
I'd go in and say, look, what's malty flavor? You know, and he'd recommend
it. Yeah,
because
he had a bunch of sugar from whatever he was eating, and he's going, yeah.
Well, as a result, my son, who's now 24, and brewing beer in Brooklyn, he was the only kindergartner in the world with a favorite beer.
Of course. That's excellent.
Now, that was the Bach beer that comes with a little plastic billy goat around the neck.
I did not read the article, but I know Chef David Chang just came out against craft beer, started up a little storm.
Against craft beer.
He just likes cheap beer, which...
Oh, fuck him.
All right, fair enough.
But I really?
Yeah, my God.
I would think your kind of research, you're like the Joe Esterhaus of, like, you really got in there. So when you do the book Strip Clubs for Dummies, you let the Reverend and I know. We'll do the research.
Oh, okay.
But I would think a book where you had to buy beer to research it and then write about it would be something that would be hard to write because you would just be drunk on beer.
There you go. Well, actually, I have my colleagues who did the wine book. They taste wine all the time. They did when we did champagne. We got a $5,000 budget.
Wow!
Champagne for Dummies.
Yep.
$5,000 budget to buy champagne. And I said, "What
at
the hell?
Cost or
what the hell did you do with all that champagne?" He said, "Well, my neighbors love me. He lives on Long Island, but also I ended up using a lot of it to water my plants outside my house.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? The Blanc,
you found the Grand Clicquot Grand Dame.
Yeah, right.
You know, the Blanc.
Very good with posies.
You know, I hate to break that budget up, but Ace Frehley on his last tour with Kiss had a $150,000 champagne contraption that would be automatically restocked at each city for him.
And what was it, like a Jägermeister machine with
Bollinger? He just said he couldn't remember. We should also say that in addition to Steve, his daughter Chelsea, who is the Lena Dunham of the evening, as she is from here.
She's got class.
All right.
Okay.
She's from here, but she goes to school in Ohio and has recently taken on cooking at Oberlin. So welcome to the show, Chelsea.
Thank you.
And we're going to get you some pizza. Have you taken anything from your father's books in your recent cooking challenge of having to cook for 120 people?
No.
Oh, all right.
But
sorry,
except I haven't read Twinkie Deconstructed, to be honest.
Right. I'm shocked.
He's a talker, so I get it at the dinner table. But I guess I have a pretty sophisticated taste in beer.
All right.
Which is bad when all I have at college is PBR.
Oh, yes. I have drank my lifetime quota of PBR. I was at Coyote Ugly earlier tonight. I opted not to pay $2 for PBR. I spent $5 on the Bud Light. I am going to suggest.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
Can you explain
that
to me?
I know. I'm going to suggest a dessert for your 120 people in honor of your father. Take it or leave it. And you can use like a reduced beer batter or a Riuniti dripping sauce. I think a Twinkie bread pudding. Might be the way to go.
So well, that or what's the thing where you line the, what do you call it, the plate? Like a
tiramisu? Like
no,
the
almost,
fingers?
Yeah, like a tiramisu or a, like where you line.
Trifle.
Yeah, a trifle.
So should I
Twinkie
just stack
trifle.
Twinkies
yeah.
on
no,
Twinkies?
No, you gotta, I think we're into the Twinkie discussion now. Yeah. But I think you gotta repurpose the Twinkie in a bread pudding with like a bourbon maple sauce or something
oh.
that, and, was that and, an oh like yes or an oh like no?
Yes, and then add bacon.
If you would want to supply the bourbon for a cake that would feed 120 people.
It's called Early Times. I had 3.5 liters in plastic bottles that I walked into the desert at Burning Man with.
Oh.
And the last of it went in my root beer at In-N-Out Burger in Sparks, Nevada. So, but I do know you can get more. And honestly, it was like $17 for a big magnum. So the Twinkie. Can you give me, Rev, give me some of your iconic snack foods.
Well, I mean, the thing was, it's like I always like to talk about the lunchbox culture.
Okay.
Right, when we were kids, right? We got all lunchboxes. Right? Now, my mom would stuff my lunchbox with weird Greek food.
Okay.
Right? But there was always the American snack.
So you could fit in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't even about whether I liked it or not.
Right.
There was always like, you know, a pudding or a Twinkie.
All right.
A ring ding, a ho-ho.
Yes.
You know, a chocodile, something.
All right.
So that I can fit in. That, which also then became, much like jail, it became uh-huh. currency. So it'd be like,
right,
okay,
currency, right.
Yeah. I got a chocodile.
I don't even know what a chocodile is.
And my mother gave me a chocodile is a chocolate covered Twinkie.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah.
That's a real thing.
The man knows
it's
his food.
Thing,
wow.
Yeah.
The man knows his food. I'm impressed.
So I'd be like, I got a chocodile.
All right.
And my mother gave me some weird Greek meat thing.
Yes.
And I'd like your peanut butter and jelly.
For Spanakopita and the chocodile.
Yeah, how do we trade? Yeah, right. Let's trade here.
All right. Well, I can think of unnatural space food like things like Cheetos and even Oreos and a quick. Shout out to my man Dan Pashman, who I went to his book signing the other night for Eat More Better. He did show me how to eat an Oreo better, which is to take the top off, put it underneath, and then flip it upside down. But I grew up in a household
he knows
all
his
whole
stuff.
Wheat bread, liverwurst. I never got any of the desserts. So the desserts I saw from afar.
It's got liverwurst. That was important.
Yeah. The desserts I saw from afar
Isn't
were
that
things
a dessert?
Like Oreos.
Oh, no,
it is.
No,
it's, like a, it's like a pate dessert, I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
But the Twinkie, I felt like, was the most iconic because
absolutely.
It didn't exist in any other form. It was its own thing.
It was the perfect snack food in the fact that everybody it passed racial lines, religious lines. Now, right now, we're in snowball territory. Like,
Aren't
if you guys
we?
Remember snowballs.
Yeah, yeah but
they're,
I mean,
they're giant balls of marshmallow
right.
covered in crap.
But right. I would right. argue which, the marshmallow which, never improved upon its original form.
Yeah, but the thing is about snowballs, it's the Halloween thing.
Yeah.
It's the Christmas thing, and then it comes back in St. Patrick's Day.
Oh. Right, but at the same time, the Twinkie was 365 days of the year thing.
Oh, yeah,
because
absolutely.
Is it sponge cake? Is it why is it yellow? What is it exactly? And what is the filling?
Let's defer to a guest.
And let's talk to you,
right.
Steve.
Right. Well, now, the filling is the sort of the holy grail of food research.
Okay.
I'm sure Michael Pollan and crew would agree.
Right.
I actually had the pleasure of walking up to a Twinkie bakery in two places, one in Wayne, New Jersey, and the other in Maine, Biddeford Pool, Maine. I asked somebody at the door in Maine, okay, I know I can't get in here, but could you tell me, come on, what's in the cream filling?
It's like Michael Moore at GM.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He said,
oh, yeah, we can
I could
tell
you, but I'd have to kill
you. Oh, yeah.
And I asked a lot of food scientists. Uh-huh. I asked a lot of food creators in the business what it might be. No one really could agree, except uh-huh. they all identified yeah. a lot of the various ingredients that would be in there. And, of course, one of the key ingredients is cellulose gum.
Okay.
Which sure. everybody knows is made from trees, and when they're being made into paper, you know, all you do is stop at one point and sort of take a line of the production off to an area with less chemical in it.
Right.
And a key ingredient is my favorite ingredient, really, is polysorbate 60.
What's okay. that?
Now, of course, we all know polysorbate 60.
I tried, no? cheered for them all through my high school years. But
he actually was in a polysorbate 60 eating
player.
Contest.
Yes. There you go. Well, I actually got a sample of polysorbate 60 from one company that makes it.
Okay.
And I asked, a quart bottle. He shows up in the mail. Uh-huh. I asked this guy, so can I eat this? He said, yeah. Oh, don't eat.
No.
So you won't be able to taste anything else for 2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
It is really strong emulsifier. Essentially, it's an artificial egg yolk, but
okay.
it's such a strong emulsifier that you only use a little dab in these ingredients.
Uh-huh. Really?
Just amazing. It's, if you look at the ingredient list, it's towards the end. That means they're just using a tiny bit. It's so effective. It's used in cosmetics to make cosmetics gooey, paint to make yep. paint gooey. And it's made of three primary, basic ingredients, two of which are plant sources.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Corn and palm oil.
Okay.
So the corn is made into sort of a corn syrup type thing, and the palm oil is made into a stearic acid, and they're mixed together. And they make a weak emulsifier that was used for years and still is listed on bread ingredients. But after World War II, they realized, thanks to having beaten the Germans and getting all the secrets from the German chemical companies, that if you hit this stuff with a little, it's obvious, ethylene oxide.
Uh-huh.
Toxic explosive gas. Ethylene Woo-hoo! Oxide is
right.
used to
yeah.
blow up tunnels in yeah. Vietnam. A plant blew up in Texas and killed 20 people. Ethylene oxide, you hit this emulsifier with ethylene oxide, and boom, you get this goo that just with the cellulose gum. Oh my gosh. And then oil, of course.
So there is an unwritten book just about the snacks of Joseph Mengele.
Yeah.
I got to take a break from all this experimentation because my hunger has peaked. So
it's my next book.
All right. So, Steve, we're going to come back after this break. We're going to get you some pizza, but we have a little surprise.
Polysorbate
60
topping?
Even better.
Oh.
An eating disorder surprise.
Uh-oh.
Steve Ettinger, his lovely daughter Chelsea, the Reverend, and myself, not as lovely. We'll see you in a moment.
To No Deceiver by Huntronic.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Kane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to kane5.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Fruit Pie the Magician, the Hostess Pie Technician.
Fruit Pie!
You what?
Look out for the ghost!
Oh, drat! I'll fix him with the Hostess Fruit Pie. Ooh. Here's your reward, big Hostess Fruit Pies. Apple, berry, cherry. Full of fresh fruit flavor. Mm. You get a big delight in every bite of Hostess Fruit Pie.
Am I the only one who's scared by Fruit Pie the Magician? That he should be interacting with kids?
That was a Halloween Fruit Pie.
All right. I will say this. I have... The one thing I would buy from a deli late at night when I'm very drunk every now and again is that Hostess Fruit Pie in the like the seasonal flavor. Because the coating, you can't tell if it's gone good or bad. It's like a cracked kind of earth, you know, like the craters of the desert.
This time of year, the one thing I can't stand, I used to love pumpkins. I used to love everything squash and pumpkin oriented.
Right.
And now it's like, hey, pumpkin Skittles. Hey, pumpkin you know.
So pumpkin's
pumpkin
been overdone.
Pumpkin shoe soles. Hey, pumpkin,
Well, we're going to reintroduce our guest because we figured out that why, like pumpkins, why would you ever want to eat anything from the dirt when you could have something like good processed food like Hostess Twinkies? So Steve Ettinger is here with us, and he's written Twinkie Deconstructed. He's also contributed to 39 other books that that have gone on to other sales. But perhaps the Twinkie, and we've delved into some of the vegetable matter, some of the plant matter that makes up a Twinkie. But the one I'm really curious about, some of the Twinkie ingredients, Steve, have to be mined.
Yes.
Mined as in, like, guys with sledgehammer or whatever, picks.
Well,
what are they called? Picks?
Well, actually, giant claws.
Giant claws.
10 feet high. I was down 1,600 feet underneath the surface of Wyoming, Green River, Wyoming.
Okay.
In one of the five mines there where they get basically all of American baking soda. Actually, it's sodium carbonate, which they make into sodium bicarbonate by adding a carbonate
by
to it.
Getting it to experiment in college.
That's right.
Right.
And it was amazing to me. They're digging out this ore called trona, which is almost pure sodium carbonate, and then they just mix it with a little carbon dioxide in a giant seltzer bottle, which they get from the world's largest coal mine, which is nearby.
There must be a good pizza place near there, though.
Well, you know what? There may
be. At least in a good eggery place.
I mean, that's right.
Yeah.
The ground, it's a beautiful area. The ground around there is all settled a few feet because of all the extensive mining there.
Wow. Yeah.
In the rest
Plus
of the world, they
the
make
pizza
it chemical.
Eating from the coal oven, and then the dyspeptic feeling, and then the belching from the Alka-Seltzer.
Right.
Now, this is not a tour that's open to the public, I would assume.
No.
So are you maybe the only civilian to have taken this tour? And how did you get permission?
It's possible. It's a professional secret about how I do my work, but basically I kept calling and I got turned down by a really nice guy at a neighboring, at Arm & Hammer's mine.
Okay.
And he felt bad. He said, but, you know, call my friend so-and-so over at this other place, which is more industrial.
Right.
And typically I go in the back door, and these engineers are not used to people calling them up and saying, hey, what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
And then the boss has to say, okay. Now, I actually went back there with the TV crew. Cause
oh, wow. All right.
The History Channel did a pilot. They wanted to do a TV show based on me and my book. It didn't go anywhere. We did the pilot, though, which was great fun.
It has a good shelf life, though, I'd imagine.
There you go. But the guy who got the TV crew in said, the manager said, no, it costs too much.
Because
they're produce, you know, they're doing 1,200 pounds a minute or something. And then he said, you know what? I became an engineer because I watched Mr. Science or whatever it was called on TV.
Right. Bill
Come on in. Come on in. And it was so cool because they had, for the TV crew, they actually had to shut down.
Wow.
But, you know, that you see it going, digging this claw. There's a 700-foot face. They go back and forth. It all crumbles. Stuff was crashing onto my head, which was not a good feeling when you're 1,600 feet under the ground.
Right. But that's amazing because here you are, like, people think of an author as, like, sitting in Park Slope on his typewriter.
Well, beyond that, I kept saying, all this for a little cake? You know, it's not a cake, it's a mine. You know?
Okay, okay. So that's
I wanted to see the Twinkies come out of the cave, you know.
That's baking soda, though. I mean, beyond baking soda, though, is there anything a little bit more exotic that we may not know about that may not be animal or vegetable?
Well, the vitamins, which I thought, because there are a lot of vitamins in fortified, enriched flour.
Oh.
And I thought, well, they'd be squeezed from roots or berries or something like that. No, they're almost all made in China now. And there's two different ways of making them. Either they're fermented or they're made from petroleum, Chinese petroleum.
All right, so wait, you just said there's vitamins in
Twinkies.
Yes!
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they were promoted as a healthy snack in the ads in the 50s.
Yeah.
Moms, give your kids a healthy snack with protein to grow on as well.
So, like, there's vitamin crap in Twinkies. Right.
What?
Well, actually, Marion Nestle, the world's greatest nutritionist, I asked to meet her. She was kind enough to write a blurb for the book. And I went over to her office at NYU, and I swear to God, she said, bring Twinkies. Oh. And I sat with Marion Nestle and ate Twinkies. And she's reading the label. I'm thinking, this is really surreal.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, it's mostly flour and sugar, which is...
Our missing host
used to always tell me, he goes, everything you eat in America is fat, salt, and sugar.
Yeah.
He goes, add wheat.
Yeah, add wheat. There you go. And that's what it is.
Now,
it's a cake, you know.
Hostess conglomerate aware of your efforts while you were writing the book?
Yes.
Supportive or not supportive?
Not at all. being simplistic and slightly dull, I called them up and said, hey, I want to write a book about you. Can you show me everything there is? And they said, well, you know, your book sounds interesting. Let me get back to you.
Right.
I was talking to a guy with a great title.
And then nine legal.
He was the vice president of cake.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Is that a great job?
I want to be the vice president of cake.
Why didn't you tell us as kids that could be a job? Right.
I want to be the cake czar. I mean, we have an Ebola czar.
Russia.
I want to be the cake czar.
Right.
You know?
But he called back the next day. He said, you know, if you want to reminisce about your childhood memories of Twinkies, great. But
back when they were healthy and had vitamins.
You know, forget about it.
But you know what's good about Twinkies?
I want to know.
Is they have eggs in them, right?
I figured out 1/500th of an egg.
So I found out recently that Oreos are so artificial that they're vegan.
Wow.
That's vegan so Oreos. Fucking awesome.
But we now know exactly how many Twinkies you have to break to make an omelet.
Yeah, 299. I always wondered.
Well, this is where, Steve, our worlds intersect, because I am a competitive eater with Major League Eating, and on many occasions I've eaten Twinkies in competition. I eat Twinkies.
Wow.
I ate 25 in 5 minutes, dunking them in coffee to enter the Wing Bowl, which is an event in Philly.
Oh, my God.
Which is about as close to the apocalypse as you can get without it being the actual apocalypse. And then Hostess, of course, went out of business, and they came back, and they thought, we want to promote that we're back. Last year in Tunica, I should also mention that documentary filmmaker Jake Borat is not on the air with us. He's sitting in. He did his bachelor party drive through Clarksdale and recommended a great juke joint for me. But I went down to Tunica to the casino there, and we did a Twinkie eating contest. So it's 6 minutes, all you can eat. And unfortunately, I found the spongy quality in that event, non-dunking. And I think I maybe only ate 30, but I would like you to guess how many Joey Jaws Chestnut ate in 6 minutes.
Joey Chestnut.
He's the number one ranked eater, San Jose, California. He's done 69 Nathan's hot dogs in 10 minutes, but how many Twinkies in 6 minutes do you think a human?
You said you did 30?
I did 30.
I'll say he did 50.
Okay. You would be wrong by almost three. He did 121 Twinkies in 6 minutes.
That's insane.
Yes.
That's more than I've eaten.
Do you know how many years his stomach is going to outlive him now? It's got like a half-life
of
49 years.
It's like
plastic. So we're gonna do this. We got you something tonight.
Oh, no.
Which I feel in New York is diametrically opposed to the Twinkie. This is from D. Roberta's in Manhattan. I'm going to fondle it with my hands. I apologize. I feel like Mr. Fruitcake, the magician. This is two Italian desserts.
Oh.
This is a spagliatelle.
Oh, spagliatelle.
And then the traditional, the cannoli, which, you know, the Italians would kill me for saying it, but let's be honest, it is the Twinkie of Italian pastries because it has a hard exterior with a creamy filling. And the one thing about Italian pastries is you can tell upon eating them what exactly is in them, even if you can't tell the process. So that is for you
and
for Chelsea.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
For being such a kind guest.
Now, thank you so much.
Hostess was not helpful while you were writing the book. Any response after the book?
Yes.
Did you hear from the president of Cake? That's what we want to know.
Hear from the president of Cake. I've got two anecdotes that were really, really cool. One was there's a major ingredient supplier in Kansas City where Twinkie's people were headquartered at the time. And they supply all the big bakeries. And I was very connected with them. They were very helpful. And he said, the word on the street, after the book came out, the word on the street in Kansas City is, meaning Hostess headquarters, is hate the title, but love the book. Because I actually spoke at a conference of baking professionals, and there was a Hostess guy there, and he was real embarrassed. Everybody wanted to take a picture with him.
Yeah.
But they loved hearing my take on what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one put all that stuff together before. I mean, people don't write about the baking industry in general. And that was one thing. And then the other was the PR firm put out a statement after ABC Nightline ran a feature on this, debunking me in a really wonderful way. I thought it was really well written.
Okay,
they said, some people look at the starry sky and they want to count the stars and tell us, the chemical makeup of the stars. But some of us just like to look at the sky and basically said and appreciate the beauty.
Yes.
That's romance. Bullshit. Okay.
The beauty of
fucking
the Twinkie.
Bullshit.
Well, I did not meet the vice president of Cake, but I met some high-ranking Hostess people. And the thing I asked, I said, hey, what is it like inside the think tank where you're coming up with new products? And they actually were very forthcoming with me, and they said, you know what? We don't really roll out new products, and maybe because of the bankruptcy. They said, we keep doing, and you're going to hate this, Rev, we just do seasonal spin-offs, meaning like the green Twinkie for St. Patrick's Day, or like...
Can we not talk about that?
You know, fair enough, yes.
then there's also the Malamar, which is a delicacy of the cold season.
No, we can tell. Like, I mean, listen, Marshall. One of the things, I tried to take some notes on my phone, right? Because I didn't have my computer with me today. But here's what I found out about my phone and snack food. It does not understand how to spell snack food. So, like, Whoopie Pie is Woo P Pies. Entenmann's is N-T Men's. Pepperidge Farm is Pepper Ridge Farm.
That's what they taste like to me.
Yeah, and Stella D'Or actually came through.
Oh, Stella D'Or. Well,
because it's not for breakfast
it's
anymore.
Dry biscuits. But interesting, you should mention your phone, because off air, Steve mentioned two books that we will not read from him. One about the inside of phones, iPhones, and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And the other about vitamins. So, Steve, you've already said what books you're not going to write. So, what's next? What can we expect?
Well, I would like to work on sort of inside of smartphone, like inside a Twinkie, how they're made. It's absolutely fascinating, all these little sensors. And I did go to a factory where I saw buckets of what looked like coal coming in the back door. It was pure silicon, just dirty lumps of gray stuff.
Okay.
And out the front door are these absolutely polished, perfectly flat, perfectly crystalline disks of silicone that are made into chips. And I thought that was fascinating. But also, I'm trying to figure out how these things work, and I've Twinkies I get.
Twinkies you get. All right, fair enough. I had a non-civilian tour of the Nathan's Hot Dog Factory in Chicago in an undisclosed location. There's a new, John Morrell now makes the Nathan's Dogs, but that would be a very short book. It wouldn't even be a chapter. It is a pallet of white powder and a pallet of meat. And the one thing I did find amazing is there's hardly any waste. Anywhere you go, there's a little basket, and if there's a misshapen dog or something, they just bring it back to the starting line. So if you're not a Nathan's dog, you know, as you go, you will be one at the end. But
we're gonna wrap up. But I want to throw out a couple of shout outs.
Yes,
Eating Disorder is actually, even though you didn't know this, a media sponsor for the Sean Casey Animal Rescue Block Party happening next Sunday, which you all can see on our Facebook page and our Twitter page, which we'll be able to see soon. But if you guys have anything to shamelessly plug, it's the time to do it now.
Well, Maybe you want to talk about Oberlin. No.
Yeah. you're feeding 120 people, Chelsea, at Oberlin.
Right.
And we've already decided the dessert is going to be Twinkie bread pudding with a bourbon maple reduction sauce.
I think that would be great. I think it would be awesome if only it met all of the food standards of Oberlin Student Cooperative Association.
Let's see.
Bastards. So they're only going to serve vegan Oreos is what I'm hearing.
Local exactly. Organic, vegan.
It's
right?
Like, yeah, it's pretty local. We have high standards, let me tell you.
I think farm to table is over. I think it should be petri dish to factory.
Yeah, what if it comes out of the chemistry farm? Yeah. I mean, it could be local.
The turkey, right. mind to table.
Yeah,
cloning is local if it happens in your own town.
Yes.
I think we're going to eat a lot of insects in the future.
Yes. All right.
High protein for, well, I guess insects are not vegetarian.
No.
Never mind. That's not going to happen.
No. All right. Well, there we have it. So a special thanks to Chelsea, to Steve Ettinger, joining us tonight in a pretty fascinating discussion. Check us out on heritageradio.org.
And at
Eating Disorder.
Fork U Radio on Twitter.
Fork U Radio on Twitter. And definitely check out the Rev's block party. And we'll see you next week. We got some big, big guests coming in. So we've got a lot of leftover pizza to eat. Eating Disorder.
Yeah.
We're out.
Yeah.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.